Off top, Turritopsis doria is an immortal jellyfish. So when it reaches a certain age, rather than die, it reverts back to like a juvenile polyp stage and starts all over. Unless it's killed, it won't die. Is that what Tom Brady's doing? Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, Charlie. So we had another 90s football game. It felt like it's just run game and defense, which I still loved it. And the 49ers defense in their running game was incredible. And I feel like you might look at the stats and be like, hey, they didn't run the ball every down. But when they weren't running the ball, they were throwing screen passes to Deebo Samuel, who turned those into big plays, which were also running plays. And this is why people say things like Jimmy Garoppolo's a winner, because the whole team conspires to carry him and give him a win.
Well, I think that this is the Jimmy Garoppolo thing. He just gets the ball to their best players, and whether or not it's just a simpler game plan to get the ball to Deebo Samuel and you know, Jeff Wilson and Ayuk and George Kittle closer to the line of scrimmage, whatever. He can do that at a baseline competency enough to make the 49ers look pretty good when their defense is this dominant.
I mean, yeah, I guess. But to be fair, the biggest play of the night, I imagine like the biggest EPA play of the night, yeah, the biggest yards gain of the night was Jimmy G like lucking into a big play.
Could have been a pick.
It was a bad throw. Like, had he thrown it, and I'm assuming, like, I know some quarterbacks will place it there. I remember in a joint practice we had a long time ago when I was in Denver against the Cowboys, Tony Romo was there, and, like, we're doing one-on-ones. I jumped the route in one-on-ones and was really – thought I had an interception, and he just threw it incredibly high. And he said that he looks at the cornerbacks, not at the receivers, and he throws away from the cornerbacks. And, I mean – It kind of blew my mind because I never thought that that was possible before. And I know it doesn't sound like a big thing, but maybe that's what Jimmy was doing, like throwing away from the defender, but he was throwing off his back foot. And also, I feel like I don't want to give Jimmy that much credit because it seemed more like just a bad ball that turned into the best play of the night. So it sounds like I thought we were partners in reason and logic, but it sounds like you want to say Jimmy G just wins.
No. My tepid take was that he is baseline competent enough to let the playmakers of their defense do a good enough job to win games. Yeah, that is, I can't go farther than that, because that's like saying, hey, you are perfectly mediocre.
It's a lot like the Cowboys. Like, it feels like they're the same situation where they got injuries that sent them to the backup quarterback, which may have forced them into a more simplified game plan. And to be fair to Trey Lance, we never saw really in the Soup Bowl, where they were just playing in a bowl of soup in Chicago. Then we saw him for a little bit after that and never really saw him again. But there's something about the comfort. I don't know if it feels comfortable. It just feels like so much. It feels like the pressure is so high when Jimmy G's at quarterback. It's like, we got to do this. The defense is like, we got to do this. And Deebo is like, I got to find a way to score. They had that big run from Wilson, and it seemed like they could run the ball at will, and it's not that much pressure on Jimmy G. And the one time he threw like a really good ball to the back of the end zone to Kittle, Kittle stepped out of bounds. So yeah, he doesn't even get credit for his good pass. So I mean, I don't know. I think, unless you got anything else on the 49ers, I kind of want to pivot to the Rams' offensive ineptitude.
The Rams are much more interesting. Let's go to the Rams.
Yeah. Good, good. I mean, I feel like we should say D'Amico Ryan's name a bunch of times, though. D'Amico Ryan's, because we're going to talk about how Kyle Shanahan is an offensive genius for the rest of this season, and not point to the fact that the last season and this year with D'Amico Ryan's, the strength of their team's kind of been their defense and not this Kyle Shanahan geniusness. But all right. Cooper Kupp's not a true number one.
Explain. After this game, their only good player, the only guy on the team who played well. Explain.
He had numbers. I don't know if I would say he played well.
He had 13 catches for 113 yards.
Yeah, he had numbers. I don't know if he played well. So they doubled him on a couple third downs. And I'll have to look at the all 22 and see if I'm actually right, fully right about this. about how little respect they showed Cooper Kupp. And I know, like, I feel like you think this is absurd. And maybe I'm being hyperbolic with saying he's not a true number one. He was my number one receiver in the league in this offseason because of the numbers he put up last year. However, when I'm watching this game, I recognize that they need that other guy so badly. And Robinson's not it. They need somebody who they can put outside and can win one-on-one. When they put Cooper Kupp outside, I saw it on two separate occasions. Stafford looked at him. He got pressed out of the play, and Stafford went back somewhere else. When they're motioning him in the backfield and motioning him across the field, running him out of backfield, putting him in stacks, doing all these like unique things to get him in situations where he can run option routes on linebackers or get two-way goes against nickels. Yeah, that's valuable thing to move the chains. It's a valuable thing to have, but it doesn't scare the defense. So this 49ers team that doesn't blitz very much were like completely comfortable with leaving Cooper Kupp matched up with guys who like aren't like shut down corners and blitzing throughout the course of this entire game. And Cooper Kupp got numbers, but like he didn't impact the game enough to me. And I know it sounds crazy with the 100 yards and 13 catches, but when you're watching that game, he's not having the impact that like a number, and it's not fair to say Tyreek Hill, but like any number one receiver, you're not going to be able to be that aggressive if you're afraid that this guy is going to like break the game.
Okay, we're about to become first take because I think he's clearly a top five or six receiver in the NFL. And I get it. He might not have been a true number one tonight, but I can't think of anything that makes you more of a pure number one than, and this is your do it in the playoffs moment. When it's the final drive of the Super Bowl and everyone knows the ball has to go to you over and over and over again. And I don't care if he's playing in the slot, if he's playing as an H-back, if he's playing as an X, if they can just continue to feed him the ball and he can beat your Super Bowl opponent over and over again after you win the Triple Crown and have one of the best receiving seasons ever for someone not named Jerry Rice or Randy Moss. You get to have one bad game against the DeMeco Ryans led defense and still be a number one.
Okay. We will not be first take because when I'm wrong, I'll just be like, all right, I'm wrong. I'm wrong about the terminology that I'm using. You are right about that. Me saying he's not a true number one is like me just feeling like he's not what I've come to expect from that position. He does not threaten. He does not scare the 49ers. And that was the problem tonight. They don't have somebody that they are worried about. They were completely comfortable with Cooper Kupp moving the chains periodically because they knew at some point this offense would peter out. And I don't want to blame Cooper Kupp. It's completely wrong person to blame here. But he is not – they're asking more of him than I think he's capable of providing at this point. They can't run the ball consistently. They don't have another threat that can win outside. The fact that he can't win outside is a problem. It's not a problem when you have someone who can win outside. They don't have that person. So I framed this improperly. You're right. Coming down on Cooper Kupp is the wrong person to come down on. He is great for what he does. But this offense is incomplete if they're not going to be able to find some other threat on this team other than Cooper Kupp, and they don't have it.
So I do want to get more into the Rams offensive ineptitude and if it's fixable. But the one follow-up question I have is I think we've talked about this a little bit with Amon-Ra and now with Cooper Kupp. And that is the value of slot receivers. And the two follow-up questions I have are, one, it seems like a lot of this, their production in your eyes is a value or is the result of incredible coaching, getting them in situations to succeed. And then two, that their impact on the game is smaller than the stats. And it's like, so can a slot receiver never be a number one receiver is the first question I have. And two, why don't more teams have guys that are dominant in the slot if it's something that can be created by play calling and scheme?
Oh, no, I don't think that it's exclusively created by play calling and scheme. I think these guys are special players. Mm-hmm. But in the same way that like a middle linebacker can only have so much impact on the game, if you can only win in the slot or when you're in a stack or when you're at an H-back, there's only so much impact you can have on the game or so much threat you can make to a or you can have on a defense. So it's not even about the position that they put him on the field, because you can put Tyreek Hill in the slot and he has big play threat ability that scares defenses.
We said Debo.
Debo in the slot. He has the ability to make your defense adjust to them. And I did not see that out of Cooper Kupp. And like I mentioned, there were some third downs where they really wanted to stop him so they would double Cooper Kupp. But the worst case scenario in much of this game is Cooper Kupp's going to catch a 5, 7, 10-yard pass and move the sticks. And that is something that as a defensive coordinator, you're like, all right, I'm going on 3rd and 5. I'm going to blitz because if we sack him, we're great. If we don't sack him, Cooper Kupp's going to catch a 7-yard pass, and then we're going to line up and play again. It's very different when you have somebody who's out on the edge and you're like, all right. So the reason why the slot, I think, matters, why it's diminished, is because it's closer to the middle safety. Mm-hmm. So if you are working from the slot, like inherently you're going to have a tougher time of getting away from the help. And if you're on the edge, the help has to declare itself so much sooner. So if you're far to the right wide receiver that requires a double team, fine. The safety goes over there and doubles him. Everyone else has the rest of the field to work with, and he has to declare it quickly. For the slot receiver, that's not the same thing. And if they put Cooper Kupp on the edge, I saw it, like I mentioned, on 2 occasions, and it's not fair. Maybe I need to watch all Cooper Kupp outside film for the rest of or previous seasons, and maybe he's out here working people, and I don't realize it. But that's what it boils down to me, is that it threatens the defense.
Yeah,
far less than having someone else out there. And we talked about it with Tyreek Hill, what they used to do with the Chiefs. Even when they put him in the slot, they would run those deep overs, which are just like horizontal go routes, and it would still, the safety would still have to address it. And Cooper Kupp, if you watch him, they'll motion him, push him in the stack. He'll delay off the line of scrimmage for a full count, and then he'll get into his route. Once he delayed off the line of scrimmage, nobody's scared anymore. Like, okay, if it's a must-have 3rd and 5, yeah, that's terrifying. But in the first quarter, there are no must-have 3rd and 5s. In the third quarter, it just doesn't feel like that's something that's out there. But there are other players who can make these big plays that Cooper Kupp rarely makes. And this feels like, I feel very stupid in that, you're right, me saying the stuff about him being number one was wrong, and me pretending like he's the problem in the offense is wrong. We shouldn't focus on him. This offense has a lot of shortcomings. It's just that if the expectation is that Cooper Kupp, I don't think, see, that's where it comes down to, is I don't think Sean McVay expects Cooper Kupp to do that.
No.
Yeah, and that's the problem. They need Odell back. They need Robinson to do what they brought him in there to do. They need somebody to be that guy, and they know it's not him.
That's the thing. Like, I was just looking at the box score, and look, the personnel is terrible around Cooper Kupp. Like, the running game is seemingly falling apart, which is so weird for someone coming out of the, you know, Shanahan coaching tree with McVay. The other pass catchers, like, Stafford doesn't even look at Allen Robinson. It looks like Tyler Higbee's their number two receiver, and like, they're talking about Ben Skowronek being a fullback wide receiver hybrid. This is not the offense that has been high powered for the last 5 years. It seems like them mortgaging their future is finally caught up to their roster right now on the opposite side of the ball.
That's a fair point. He threw that one fade to Robinson that got batted away in the end zone.
Yeah, 6 targets.
So he did have more targets than I remember. That's the only one I actually like stands out in my mind as a great play by the defender. But yeah, this is good that we're testing this out, because I feel like it's refined for my get up takes tomorrow morning, because blaming Cooper Kupp is not the answer, but he is also not the answer. And Matt Stafford, yeah, I need to watch the All-22, because it's like, if they're going to blitz you, and I guess they had some issues on offensive line again, but blitzing like opens up these opportunities. You can't be, and as good as D'Amico Ryan's defense is, there had to be chances out there to be had. And I couldn't see him from the TV copy, but they blitzed him a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt either couldn't find the guy or nobody could get open. And again, that's why it's like Cooper's not that guy. You know,
I'm trying to assign blame to this Rams team, because that's what we do. And I'm going step by step. And I was like, huh, let's look at Matthew Stafford. His QBR has plummeted. He's thrown 6 interceptions through 4 games. Everything is down. And then I'm like, wait a second. Wasn't there that graphic at the start of the game about the Rams offensive line? Maybe that's why he took 7 sacks tonight. And I'm like, you know what? Les Snead didn't address this offensive line, as he spent money elsewhere and used picks as, you know, trade bait for the last several years. Maybe it's his fault. And what I think I'm going to settle on, though, all of it. Every level of this is sort of broken right now for the Rams offense.
I think it is. Yeah. So, yeah, they're trade-offs. It's something that we talked about earlier, and I always think about is their trade-offs. The trade-off for building the roster that they've been building and having Von Miller in that stretch run last year and Odell Beckham and all the people that they were able to bring in and Ramsey, like the trade-off for that is there's no room for mistakes. You can't draft wrong at this point. You can't sign the wrong free agent. There is no room for mistakes. When there's no room for mistakes, you get a roster like this. And when you have a roster like this and you're on the field, again, there's no room for mistakes. The players on the field can't make any mistakes. And so they've narrowed their margin for success, and they've traded it, and it worked out. So, like, they won a Super Bowl last year. So good job, guys, for that. Now you have to play perfect football to get back, and doesn't seem like they're capable of doing it just yet. And maybe Odell will get healthy and sign with them, and then everything will change.
Yeah. I mean, I think their defense has to be good enough to carry this team until the offense can figure it out. And the defense actually has looked pretty good tonight, despite the loss.
Yeah. All right. We're done.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, Charlie. I feel like, are we numb to how great Patrick Mahomes is? Like, has that happened already? Like, I would like to do a second of Patrick Mahomes appreciation before we talk about the rest of the weekend's games and the other quarterbacks who are not Patrick Mahomes and aren't doing Mahomesian things, even if they once were better than him or may one day be as good as him.
See, I actually don't think we are numb to him. I think we don't. Okay. Here's the spin zone on it. I don't think we give Patrick Mahomes enough credit. I think we keep straying from home and looking for that hot new quarterback that is the apple of our eye. And then every once in a while, he avoids three sacks and flips the ball 4 yards into the back of the end zone to a running back. And we're like, oh, it's pretty nice what we got at home, this Patrick Mahomes thing.
He threw a chest pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it gets a little bit, except that's my point, is like it feels like we're numb to it. And every now and then he catches our eye straying and we're like, oh, this Herbert guy, this Josh Allen guy. Hey, hey. And then he's like, I'll do a spin on the sideline and throw a chest pass touchdown. Something you've never seen before from someone who does things that you've never seen before routinely. He's incredible. And the offense is still humming along even after a bad week against the Colts and after losing Tyreek Hill and they're remaking it and whatever, blah, 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 blah. They're still, I mean, that was my pick to win the Super Bowl before the season started. And I feel more confident than ever after what they did to the Bucs. And granted, the Bucs had an unusual week. They had the hurricane displace them for part of their week practicing in Miami and then come back and play. Imagine that's a difficult thing to overcome. But they just dominated the best, what I thought was the best defense in the league.
Yeah.
And I thought that those guys were, I mean, they still are incredible, but what happens in that game didn't seem like a fluke.
I think that's really illustrative of how good the Chiefs offense is. And to your point, I think I framed it wrong the first time. We're at the pushback to the pushback to the pushback about Patrick Mahomes. Because first we were like, this guy is incredible. I've never seen anything like this. Right. And then he lost to Brady in the Super Bowl. And there was like a little pushback of like, oh, torch hasn't been passed. And then it was like, oh, this guy's incredible. And then he had the second half last year in the playoff against the Bengals. And people were like, we got to stop the early GOAT debates. We can't compare him to Brady.
Yeah.
You know, this is too much. Josh Allen is just as good as him, which Josh Allen's incredible. I'm not starting that debate. But I think we continually forget how good he is. And I want to read you one stat or one tweet, of why I think that this is the most impressive Patrick Mahomes season we've ever seen. And statistically, that might not be true with raw numbers of when he won his first MVP. But this is a tweet from Shel Kapadia. Here's where the Chiefs offense ranks through four games in the post-Tyreek Hill era. EPA per drive, first. Points per drive, first. Offensive points per game, second. Success rate, third. Patrick Mahomes is first among starting QBs in EPA per pass play. And to me, this is especially incredible because they lost Tyreek Hill, who I think you know better than anyone else. He is...
Yeah,
the gravity he has on the field cannot be matched. This guy's like the Steph Curry of wide receivers, and Patrick is just like Patrick and Andy are just like whatever. We'll still be the best offense in the league.
Is it possible that I think the game against the Colts is less interesting even than it was last week? But I think it's also possible that there's some like letdown and like they get up for bigger games, and we should not care when they play a close game against a mediocre opponent, or especially if they lose to a team that just lost to the Falcons, which like the Colts are done, but that's another conversation that we can have off air because we're not going to bore anybody with sad
Colts
talk.
The
point is, I don't think that was indicative of his team. They thought they could sleepwalk through them and their special teams failed them. But in this game, and to be fair to the Buccaneers in their defense, they started out in a hole. Like it was a fumble on the opening kickoff, and the Bucs got a lead, the Chiefs got a lead, and the Bucs seems like the recipe for their team this season is like defense, keep us close, and Brady will create enough offense for us to win late in the game. And you can't keep it close if you give Patrick Mahomes the ball in the red zone, essentially to start the game before you even get a chance to score. And then they get it back at halftime. And Travis Kelce is not the gravity player that Tyreek Hill is. And he's not, I was going to say he's not the big play threat, but he kind of is with his run after the catch. He makes really big plays. And for them to be still the best offense in the league, having lost the best receiver, I think, because you can't argue that Tyreek Hill was a product of the system, considering what he's doing now, in a new place. Like Tyreek Hill is incredibly valuable, and they did not replace him, and they never will. But they've replaced his effectiveness. They just do it differently.
We should be very clear.
Those cross-field deep balls are not like those horizontal goes that they were running with Tyreek Hill was essentially what they were. Rather than running him straight, they were running like deep overs. Those aren't in the offense in the way that they were. They're not as threatening as they were now, but they find other ways to do it. And it's so much more on Patrick. And one thing that I see in Patrick is not only him taking on more of the obligation of production on the field, he can't throw it to Tyreek Hill to bail him out. You also see him being more like leaderly, he's like ripping into Travis Kelce in the middle of the game. And they're like things that I don't know how valuable they are in isolation, but I think it's indicative of the role that he's taken on. It's clear to him that he knows that the way that the salary cap is gone and the way that the team is gone, that it's going to be on him. And win, lose, or draw, no matter what happens, the responsibility falls on his shoulders. And I like that about
him. Oh, yeah. We've entered stage two of Mahomes where it's like he's being judged by this team winning. And I think he totally realizes that. And these seasons are about making the team be in the best position to win, which is something we saw. It took, Brady and Manning years to enter that stage. And he's doing it incredibly early. One thing to your point that I think we should highlight, they didn't just not replace Tyreek Hill. They got MVS out there just doing wind sprints. They got a tall, fast guy who just runs 40 yards, then jogs back to the huddle. This is not like they even replaced him with above average players who can give 90% of what Tyreek gives. It's not. It is pieces of that offense that are just sewn together in a beautiful collage by Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, he took a bunch of scraps and made an incredible collage. But you mentioned earlier about passing the torch. Can the torch be passed while Brady and Rodgers are still in the league, right? Because the I guess I have a question about the perception of it, you know, because I think the perception is that those guys, Brady and Rodgers, are still at the top of their game. Or maybe not inside football. But anyway, I guess the point I'm trying to make is they haven't been good this year. Those old quarterbacks, Brady, Rodgers, Wilson, they have not been, it's not fair to say they haven't been good. They haven't been themselves, right? They haven't been great, which is what we expect of them. Patrick Mahomes has been. And we can move on from Patrick Mahomes and talk more about these old guys kind of being mediocre, or like, that's not fair. They're good. They just aren't.
Well, two of the three of them.
What we've come to expect.
Two of the three of them are good.
Yeah, that's true. Wilson's bad. Wilson's bad right now. And he's been that way for a little while.
Let's go to Brady first, because let's knock these out one at a time. And like, there was the quote. This is a funny quote from Mahomes after the game last night, where he's like, I feel like I had my last game against Tom Brady four times. And let's start with this. Like, what is Tom Brady doing still playing football? He is 45 years old. No one really wants him out there. And I don't think that Brady's bad. I don't think that he has really diminished. The team and that offense is not good. And there's been this prevailing opinion all over NFL Twitter, podcasts, or network. The Bucs will be fine when they get healthy. They'll figure it out. Gronk will come back. God, I don't know. When do football teams get more healthy? Like, why do we want to see Tom Brady, who's 45, who we're not even sure wants to be out there playing with a team that is not a relevant offense? And I know the conference is so bad that that might not matter, but this is not a team that we're looking at that we're like, they're definitely going to figure it out based on the personnel they have and the health they have going into after the first quarter of the season.
And this is the third year in a row where the pressure is incredibly high on them, which there's a toll that it takes on your body and on your psyche that I don't think we account for. Not only are they worn out, but there's something to be said for. I don't know if average fan can relate to this, but I feel like you can. Like, you understand that even if you aren't, like, if you have a stressful week at work, you got to get ready for an important presentation. I don't know, something like that. Like, you feel that hang over you for that week. The Bucs have been like that for 3 years now. And I think that, and I guess Tom Brady's been like that for his entire career. So maybe that's not how you can't chalk that up to impacting Tom Brady in any way. But I think it has to impact the team in some way also. And to your point, they're not going to get any healthier. I have been kind of like hesitant to like be honest about what I think this team actually is because of the Tom Brady effect, where it's like you don't ever want to doubt Tom Brady. But like, if their defense can't stop elite offenses, then they can't win, right? Or at least slow them down to some degree, because I have no reason to believe that their offense, given the injuries that they have, is going to rise to the level to like compete in shootouts. And I wanted to answer one of the questions you asked off the top. It's like, why is Tom Brady still out there? We talked about David Dennis, and I talked about this a little bit on the bonus episode on Wednesday, is at least for me, I think that I understand needing a purpose, you know? And I did not anticipate, like, when I retired from football, like, I was willing to, happy. I wasn't, like, forced out. I thought I was ready to retire. I didn't anticipate how difficult it was to like figure out the transition part of it. And I don't know if Tom Brady is like thought that far ahead, but I think that we always say, or we assume that it's his love of the game or his desire to compete, and he feeds this, that keeps him playing. It's possible that it's also like the fear of what's next, you know, and the fear of that taking that next leap and waking up one random Wednesday morning and like, what do I have to do? Like, what do I have to do? Nothing. there's some freedom, and I know it sounds counterintuitive, but there's some freedom given to you by having constraints in your life. You know, it's like the freedom from having to choose. And I know that sounds outrageous, but it's a nice thing sometimes to just not. I imagine people who like have kids or people who manage a lot of people understand how it feels to wake up one morning and have to worry about all the people that you have to manage and just like pine for a day where you're like, I ain't got to do nothing. Or I wish I was one of them where I just woke up and was told what to do and didn't have to do anything.
Well, counterpoint on this, and I'd love your opinion on it, is this the year where he's going to realize that it's time? And I think we do think that, but like, he's getting rocked last night. He's grabbing his shoulder on the ground. They're showing Blaine Gabbert on the sideline. They've rushed back Chris Godwin. It doesn't look like this offense is going to get going. Is this the year he figures it out? And I say that because I think this was in The Last Dance. There was a, when they asked MJ about why it was so tough to leave. And he's like, I wanted to be knocked off the mountaintop and I couldn't. And I wasn't. And that's why he had to come back another time with the Wizards. But it's like, is that what we're getting with Brady now? Is this his Wizards season? Is what it comes down to. Yeah. Where he realizes this isn't my life anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good parallel, I guess, with the exception of, I mean, because Jordan, if I remember correctly, was still putting up good numbers, but that team wasn't competitive. And this team is competitive, and they believe that they have a chance. Like, I wouldn't be stunned if they won the Super Bowl. I wouldn't bet on them, but, like, the idea that they could go on a run like they did with that defense and get to the game. I mean, when the Bengals fought themselves in the Super Bowl last year, it makes me feel like it's not crazy. But, yeah, I could get that. I don't know. The Brady stuff, we can get back to it in future weeks. But I can't quite figure it out, but I don't have a lot of confidence in them. But let's do Russell and Aaron Rodgers also.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I don't know where to start on. I feel like Russell is more interesting because it feels more like definite. Yeah. I have more faith in the Packers and Aaron Rodgers than I do in the Broncos and Russell Wilson. And it feels like he's just done.
Yes. Bad at football, great at TikTok.
He's great at TikTok, I guess. He's great at TikTok because he's bad at it.
That's right.
Yeah, it's not like he's coming up with some innovative stuff. He's just like, it's so cringy that it gets picked up by us weirdos on TikTok.
Is there a chance he's actually funny and he's like the Andy Kaufman of TikTok and he knows how cringy and funny these things are?
I hope so. I mean, it has to be now, right?
Yeah.
I think like you would advise a player or a person to like, you find what you're good at and you keep doing it. And I think that maybe initially he was trying to be like prototypical quarterback talk guy. And it came off as so like awkward. Mm-hmm. And now at this point, I think he's leaning into it. Right. Yeah. Now he's like, this is my brand. So I'm just going to do some weird stuff and everyone's going to talk about how weird and awkward this is. And that'll be me.
I went back and grinded the tape. We can get to the football of this in a second. I went back and grinded the tape of his when we realized his social media presence was going to be so weird. And I looked at the Mr. Unlimited video and he actually has a line in it where he's like, ooh, it's boring robot Russell. And he actually has like a robot malfunction in it at the exact time between boring and robot. And I was like, is this the clue? Is this the point where we realize he might have been saying this with comedic timing intentionally?
That's when he crossed over and stopped trying to do it and started doing it intentionally. Yeah, I mean, the on-field stuff is less funny.
Yeah.
It's just as awkward, though. He threw one deep ball that I was like, oh, Russell's back. It was one time, but he still holds on to the ball for a long time, doesn't have the athleticism, and also, like, it, I guess this ties back into the, like, the freedom that you get from like being constrained in some ways. It's like it feels that he's freed from whatever constraints on his offensive ability that Pete Carroll would have put around him, and being completely free from that is led him to make some really bad offensive decisions and try to do too much and it's not working
well,
out.
Well, I have a question about this. This is the question I've been dying to ask. Okay. Are we sure that Russell Wilson is better than Geno Smith? And I say that because they're opening up the Seahawks offense with the same offensive coordinator that Russell Wilson had that he always wanted to do. And his numbers are much better than Russell Wilson's are. And it's not an apples to apples comparison. Russell, the rest of the season is probably going to be pretty, pretty rough. They just lost their best offensive player in Javonte Williams. And again, as we said, teams don't get healthier. But like, maybe Russell's bad and Geno's not that bad.
I mean, it's hard to argue against it right now. Like, defense is up this year compared to last year. I think by efficiency, defense is 2 points better, and which makes offense 2 points worse across the league at this point last year than this year. So, Geno's not like picking on some bad. What are the teams that they play? Well, they played the Broncos, which is a really good defense in my view. Who else did they play?
They have played the Broncos, 49ers, Falcons, and Lions.
Yeah, I mean, it's two really good defenses in there and two that aren't that good. And Russ has had his chances. I think it's obvious that for the money, you know, like at this point, for the commitment that they've made to Russell, you'd rather have Geno Smith on the lower price. I don't know how to explain what's happened to Russell Wilson because it doesn't seem, I guess the minor loss in athleticism, because he doesn't seem like he's not a stiff.
Yeah.
He's not as explosive as he once was. That combined with like complete offensive autonomy to be.
That's the thing.
His undoing.
That's the play calling is the question I have, because he always wanted to run the offense that Geno Smith is now running in Seattle. Like Geno Smith has 645 yards and four touchdowns in the last two games. And like, that's what Russell always wanted to do. Meanwhile, he has complete offensive autonomy, but it does not seem like this is the offense that he dreamed of running in Denver either.
I mean, it feels like he and maybe this is a product of the defenses that he's facing, but it feels like he wants to be a precision guy who's going to pick you apart down the field, dink and dunk you and outsmart you. And it doesn't seem like he's capable of doing that. Them in that offense, they're not capable of going the length of the field without making any mistakes. And that's not how he had his success in Seattle. He had a success in Seattle because he's a great deep ball thrower and improvising, right? So I don't know. It seems like that group of death that we thought was really tough is not. That division is the Chiefs and everybody else, as we should have anticipated. And I think I just don't feel all that hopeful for the Broncos going forward. And I think it's partially because we haven't seen good stuff out of Russ, and we've seen Nathaniel Hackett be not so great. Aaron Rodgers, like, he's less spent than the other two, it feels like to me. He's getting drop passes, but they're still like an effective offense. It's just a lot more focused on the running attack. He doesn't have the Devontae, obviously, and that's a loss. They're not going to be able to replace him. But, oh, man, it just brings me back to how great Patrick Mahomes is, because Patrick Mahomes lost his Devontae, and we can't even notice it. But anyway, Romeo Doubs dropped a game-winning touchdown pass, and obviously Watson dropped that pass early in the season. And the Packers' offense is still pretty good. So I'm less worried about them, but it doesn't look the same, I guess. It feels like we're now on the down. We're officially on the downslope, which sounds crazy because he had back-to-back MVPs, but I don't see this ever going back to a like Aaron Rodgers lighting it up. And of course, this weekend he's going to throw for 400 yards and five touchdowns and make me look stupid.
No, I think you're safe on this, because even if he does, it feels like we saw him with his long extended, you know, hug with Bill Belichick. We've heard him say he's not going to play till he's 45, like Brady does. And the thing with Rodgers that's happening now, I think, is somewhat of a parallel to Brady. Not just because they're both having midlife crises, which they obviously are, but also because it feels like they're still really good players who might be on teams that can't support them in the way that we've grown accustomed to in the past. And that this is a theme that you've talked about, which is like the infrastructure of teams and how it's really hard to be a great quarterback on a bad team. And they're still great quarterbacks. You watch them. It's not, I haven't watched Rodgers and been like, you know, he's different or worse. It just feels like the parts around him are worse. And that's going to be the slow fade of his career unless something drastic changes. Right now we're paying so much more attention to like what Rodgers says and his haircut and his weird cryptic messages than his play on the field.
That's fair. I mean, you mentioned Belichick. He's done too, right? Yeah. Like he's they're down to Bailey Zappi at quarterback. That's gonna be, I mean, they still were competitive. Like, is that, should we be celebrating what they accomplished in that game? Cause they barely lost. They took Aaron Rodgers to overtime. Like, should we appreciate?
They're much less bad than I thought. Much less bad.
Yeah, they are. But they're still in that. I mean, well, I guess they could catch up to Miami depending on how the quarterback situation shakes out. But I don't think they have anything for Buffalo. But we'll see. I know that Belichick obviously wants to prove that he can win without Tom Brady. He hasn't done that yet. So this would probably be the sweetest run he could ever go on if he could go on one. But I just can't see it happening with Hoyer and Zappi at the helm. We'll see. I don't know. We'll come back to that game if they manage to, or come back to that team later if they manage to make things interesting.
One final question on these, on the transition point in the NFL, as we sweep away these older quarterbacks and usher in the new generation of guys that are going to carry the league. What's your favorite of these midlife crises? Tom Brady with his crazy hair and his cheekbones and his perfect skin, Russell Wilson's TikToks and his like 78 different voices, depending on the video. Aaron Rodgers' ayahuasca trips and his haircuts. And come on, which is the favorite? Because can we power rank midlife crises here?
It's got to be Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is number one.
Okay.
I mean, the ayahuasca takes us over the top, because Russell's is like, that's who Russell's been. He's just playing poorly now. Yeah. You know, I was like, that doesn't feel very new. Tom Brady does feel kind of new, but like he doesn't give us much that's interesting. We don't know any of the things that are happening off the field. We just know something's going on, you know, but Aaron Rodgers came back and told us. It seems more interesting to actually know what's happening with him rather than like speculation and rumors. Yeah. Give me Aaron Rodgers' midlife crisis as a more entertaining show.
Okay, I'm going Russell at number one, just because I don't know what's going to happen next week. Is he gonna like buy a fancy new sports car? He's the how do you do fellow kids meme as he continues to try and connect.
Oh man, so Belichick, like obviously in that game they missed an opportunity because they could have knocked off Green Bay, and it feels like that was kind of a theme of the weekend. With like the Ravens game, and the Jaguars had a chance to put it away. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, they didn't have to pay for that drop touchdown pass, but that was like a missed opportunity. I was thinking that was a theme for this week, but it also, like, is that just what football is? You know, like if I think back to last week's games, most of the games turn on I guess it's not always a missed opportunity. Sometimes it's a made play, but the games just always turn on such small things. And even if it's a blowout, we go back and we're like, this was the butterfly effect action that caused this to get out of hand. And if you could just change this one thing, everything would be different. But the Ravens game comes to mind because they did it in back-to-back weeks where, I guess it wasn't back-to-back weeks. It was the Dolphins game. Was that back-to-back?
2 weeks apart.
No, it wasn't. It was 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it was the Dolphins game where they just had all those mistakes. And then in this one, they're dropping interceptions that Josh Allen was trying to give them. They failed on that fourth and short. And frankly, the offense in the second half couldn't score or do anything. So it was just a series of missed opportunities. So I want to be analytically inclined, and I want to support the decision to go for it. And I think I'm going to stick with it. I know I would have kicked the field goal in that situation. However, I think that the right thing to do on fourth and two with Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen on the other side, the right thing to do is to go for it.
Well, I don't think it was the right thing to do. And I'm not even just playing the result there, because I was sitting on the couch screaming, like, can't you just take the lead with 4 minutes left? Even if Josh Allen goes down the field and scores, you're probably going to get the ball again. You pin him deep, you let your defense play. They had just gotten a stop on Josh Allen. It doesn't seem like it was impossible. I don't know. It's like, I love when coaches go for it, and I would go for it in Madden, but like, I think that we've leaned so far on the crutch of analytics on going for it on fourth down that sometimes it's like, maybe just take the lead with 4 minutes left in the game. Maybe just do that.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a simple football thing.
I mean, I can't present a great argument against it, even though like I am not mad at Harbaugh for doing it. I would have kicked it. And I think that I would have kicked it because I'm scared, but not because the right thing to do, I think, in that situation.
You would have kicked it because you wanted to go up and win the game. You wanted to be winning with four minutes left. This is what's gotten so...
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
It's gotten so bizarrely changed that, like, because Harbaugh's reaction was, I was doing what I thought was the best chance to win. And that has become, like, side of the fence, like, oh, you're going for the win. But going up by 3 points with 4 minutes left is also going for
the win. Here's the pushback. When you want to analyze these decisions, I think you need to look at what are the two alternatives. And he kicks the field goal. They have a lead, and they kick the ball off to Josh Allen with 4 minutes left. That's a great situation to be in. If you go for it, the alternative is you take a touchdown lead. You give the ball back to Josh Allen with 4 minutes left and a touchdown lead. That feels pretty great. The possibility, if you go for it and you miss it, is you give them the ball backed up with your defense, with the greatest kicker in the league, and 4 minutes left, and you hopefully force them to punt or create a turnover and score. Like, that feels like a great position to be in. You know what I mean? Like, the way I'm looking at it is the risk is to take the reward is to take a 7-point lead. The risk of things going wrong is you have 4 minutes left, the game is tied, you have the best kicker in the league, and you have the Bills backed up. The real terrible thing was Lamar threw an interception and they got pushed up, because I'm not sure. I think the outcome is different if Lamar doesn't turn it over and they don't get a touchback.
Yeah.
Because getting a touchback changed the dynamics of everything in that game to me.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And it seemed like Duvernay was open early, and because the pressure was coming from the left, Lamar was looking left and didn't see him fly open in the right corner of the end zone. And I think that's totally fair. But the question I would have for you, which is pushback that I haven't heard anyone talking about, is how much easier is it to play defense when you're just trying to hold them at best to a field goal or to tie the game? Because once the Bills had the ball in the 20, the Ravens had to play to keep them out of field goal range, not to keep them from scoring a touchdown. And that's all they had to do if they had made the kick, is keep them from scoring a touchdown.
Yeah, that's really hard. I mean, yeah, that's a fair point. I think we're right.
Yeah.
Because I said both positions, I'm definitely right. We should have kicked it. I don't know. I've moved off of what I... Except the thing with the analytics is, or with fourth down, is like you kind of have to go for it a lot for it to be worth it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's because you're going to miss some, but if you go for it enough, then you'll win more times than you'll lose. But they haven't won enough this year, the Ravens, with doing it, or last year. So this team's got to figure something out. And it seemed like it created a riff a bit. Like, the defense isn't a fan of it, and you don't want to have that. That's always, like, back to the concept of managing people, is it's always a hard thing to do, is like predict the impact. Because had they scored the touchdown, Marcus Peters is not yelling at John Harbaugh on the sideline, you know? Yeah. But they didn't. So now that's hanging, whether it's they can put it behind them or not. Like, I'm sure they're going to show up to work today and be fine, but it's in the back of everybody's head, and it's going to influence Harbaugh the next time he makes a decision, and it's going to influence the defense the next time there's a fourth down. And if they go for it and don't make it, there's going to be a lot of people like rolling their eyes and waving their hands at their Super Bowl champion coach. But,
and it's also like, it sets up this to be a massive game against the Bengals. Now they're both 2-2 going into week 5. And I think even a week ago, if we had discussed that game, we would have thought that the Bengals were still struggling, having only beaten the Jets, and the Ravens were rolling because Lamar is playing the best football of his life. Game in a hurricane, weird things happen, and they make a bad coaching decision. Next thing you know, this is as high leverage of a week 5 game as there can be.
Yeah, the Ravens' two losses were games that they had in hand, right?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, One game, the Dolphins game, they absolutely should have won. It was like 99 win probability. This game, they dominated for the first half and could have won, but didn't. So, yeah, it's a tough spot to be in, giving up to. Maybe the luck will cut for them another way. Are there any other games like the Jags-Eagles game was a good one? Is there anything else from the weekend or any other storylines that you want to hit on? Like, have we talked about the Jags being good? Or are we too late to be ahead of that? Because I feel like you and I were talking about them being good before other people recognized that they were good.
I think we're still on the right side of that. I mean, that game was a tough one for Trevor Lawrence, who had been playing so much better. And obviously the four fumbles are what totally helped with the avalanche from the Eagles offense. But like, that team, I think, still should be the favorite in the AFC South, which is crazy to think about with how dysfunctional they seemed a year ago.
The Titans won again. I mean, the Titans are very well coached, I guess, is what you fall back on when you don't know how to explain how this team keeps winning, even though you don't think they're very good. So I guess that's it. But yeah, if I had to pick one of these teams to be a fan of, I think the year is going to go better for the Jags than anyone else in the South. We talked about a group of death is not the group of death. Those teams stink. Well, they don't stink, but I mean, I guess the Broncos and the Raiders kind of do stink. The other two teams, the Chargers, are like injured and like unpredictable, and the Chiefs are good. But is the NFC least, like, so what we used to call them, are they the best division in football right now?
Well, I think we're going to disagree on this. How many good teams do you think are in the NFC East?
Good is a funny word. So I think Washington's not good.
Yes, they suck.
I think the Giants are okay. And I think that the Eagles are great, and I think the Cowboys are good.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all arbitrary words that you cannot down in any way with them. But I think more than anything, I'm just shocked, because I thought the Eagles were going to be great, and I thought everyone else in there was going to be bad. And the fact that they aren't is surprising to me.
Well, are we being hooked into the fact that the Giants are somewhat of a fraudulent 3-1? Like, that offense is still really bad.
Yeah, agreed. But I think if you... where they came from. Would they have 4 wins last year? 3 wins last year?
Yeah, and they're well coached now.
Yeah, they have 4 last year. And so I guess it's comparing them to what they were. So like, the Cowboys 3-1 is not fraudulent.
No.
The Giants were competitive with the Cowboys, and they are 3-1. I guess it's just like, when you look around the league, in large part because the offenses are down and the defenses are up, and defense from week to week can be fickle. I think it's hard to like settle in on really ranking these teams, because it's like, who has an offense you can trust? And that's all it really comes down to, and a defense that's not going to embarrass you. Yeah. And so I think that the Giants are in the messy middle, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fine. And I think the Cowboys are near the top of the messy middle. And I'm looking at the rest of the divisions, and I don't know that we have a division that has 3 teams that I think are all at or above average.
I think that's pretty fair. And I think the weirdest thing about the NFC East is it's a really well-coached division. And I think that's the crazy part, is these now seem like 3 well-run teams.
Really well, yeah.
Yeah, because Sirianni's good.
It's great, yeah. And the Cowboys seem to have figured it out.
Yeah, we make fun of Mike McCarthy, but we like Kellen Moore and Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn might just be an awesome defensive coordinator who's not a head coach. And then Daboll and Wink. It's like those three teams are all like, it goes back to the theme you talked about. You put in really good coaches and they have really good plans, and they can make mediocre teams at the top of the messy middle.
The talent is so close in the NFL, and scheme is so important, because football is different from other games in that it's like 3 seconds of action, then you stop and confer, and the coaches have influence. And there's so many different like variables in the game that the coaches are much more important in this game than in other games. And when the talent is so close, which like the worst team in the league is really good, you know, like really talented. And if you can find those advantages in coaching, it can change the team in a way that you didn't expect. I feel like I'm not doing a good job explaining it, but it's very different from basketball, where it is a lot. Like, there are changes, obviously, but you're on the floor, and from play to play, you're doing your own thing. And baseball, like, you can kind of like computer your way out of making real managerial decisions. So it's like everyone is kind of making the same decisions in baseball because there is a optimal way to play, and they're doing it. And the same is like basketball and hockey and soccer and lacrosse, and all those games are kind of the same game that is really incumbent on the players. Whereas this one's so different, and the coaches matter. So the scheme and strategy matter so what? So much more. So anyway, I'm looking at all these divisions, and maybe I got a little ahead of myself because I think I'll go through them with you really quick. AFC East, above average teams. We'll just go above average teams. Miami, Buffalo, and I'll leave
That's
it
it.
there. New England and Jets are below. So that's two. The North, I got Baltimore, Cleveland, and I think the Bengals. Yeah, I think those three teams are.
Bengals are going to be good. They're going to be fine.
Yeah, I think so. That's three teams that are above average. The South, we got, yeah, nobody. Jacksonville, maybe. They lost to Washington, though. So Jacksonville, maybe. Then AFC West, we got Kansas City and the Chargers, I think, are above. Then the North, we got Vikings and the Packers above average. Then we got Tampa in the South, and that's it. And then in the West, we got the Rams. That's about it, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like I think that, yeah, I feel stronger about my point now. I guess it's between the East and the North. AFC East and the, or excuse me, the NFC East and the AFC North. And I guess if you go team for team, I think Pittsburgh is better than Washington. And so maybe we give it to the North, and the Ravens really should
Really?
be.
I think those are the two worst teams in the NFL.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But I think that,
32 and 31.
yeah, okay. So they aren't close enough for it to matter. How do we have to decide? We can't have a tie. So how are we going to decide it? Let's go team for team. So you think the Ravens are the best team against the Eagles? I think the Eagles are better than the Ravens. 1 point for the East.
Yeah.
All right. Second best team, we'll say the Bengals and the Cowboys. I'm going Cowboys,
I'm going Bengals.
even though the Cowboys beat them. Okay,
I
cool.
think that, I mean, the Bengals had a really slow start to the year, but I have more faith in the
All right.
infrastructure.
Cleveland is better than the Giants, in my view.
Definitely.
And we'll say a draw for Washington versus the Steelers. So yeah, we don't agree. I got the East, you got the North. I
Yeah.
think we've probably gone on for too long anyway. All
Yeah, probably.
right, wrap it up. We got the stuff at the beginning of the show. You got anything funny to say or mean?
Yeah, I have one mean thing to say, and that's, well, it's really nice to us, but we deserve an apology from the city of Chicago. We were right about Justin Fields and the Bears. He should demand a trade. And you know what? Maybe you can get a sixth round pick for him and draft someone as good as Bailey Zappe, because that's how Justin Fields and the Bears have played this year. So we'll take all apologies, send them to us on any form of social media. We tried to warn you, we tried to help you. Chicago, we're your friends. We wanted to soften the landing, but no, you didn't
Oh,
listen to us.
devil horns for you. I'm so proud of you. Let your inner cornerback shine. Talk your talk, Charlie.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
How's Dominique been lately?
Bad or good?
Let's find out. This is Roses and Thorns.
Hey, hey there, honey. Oh, we said it at the same time.
I don't know. It's because we're in sync. It's a good thing, not a bad thing. What's up?
Nothing. What's up with you?
Not much. Good weekend. Had a good time. Yes. I was appreciating how you've brainwashed our children. So I'm taking Avery to her game. And she controls the music in the car.
Oh, yeah.
And she just played good music. I mean, she went to some
really?
Pop stuff. There
like
was some
what?
Stuff that I didn't recognize. I mean, the stuff, like, she was playing a lot of College Dropout and some Biggie and some old Lauryn Hill. And, I mean, it's obvious that she enjoys the songs. Like, she knows a lot of the words to them. But also, it's obvious that she's playing
That's my
them.
Baby.
Playing them for me too, but then I was like, why don't you play like some young people stuff? So then we was vibing out to some Billie Eilish, which like is not pregame music, it's like all emotional and stuff, but whatever, she has good musical taste. I appreciate that about her, and I credit you for that. There's a rose for you, even though
thank you. Yeah, I was thinking this isn't about me, but I do like roses of me. I don't necessarily want thorns of me, but because it's not about me, but I will just take some roses because, you know,
you
some
go.
Complimentary. And I mean that in both ways, like it's compliments and free roses.
You don't make a, oh, okay. You're so smart. You don't make
well, because I honestly wasn't sure which I meant. So I was like, you know, it covers both.
You don't, I mean, the point of this, the origin of this was because I make a living criticizing people, or at least part of my job is you don't do that. So
I don't criticize people. No.
I'm nice-ish. So
no,
like,
I know you are. You're very
here,
nice.
You're not here for thorns. I'm here for thorns. So
I wouldn't be able to make a living criticizing people. Like I would just be like, but he tried so hard. She did really well. Like I don't like I would find the positive. Like the way his uniform fit was great. Like I couldn't just be negative.
Whose uniform are you liking? I mean,
honestly, I think it was what it was one of the Ohio football teams. I texted you, remember? I was like, "What?" I think it was either the kicker or the punter, but some white boy had a nice butt. I don't remember what his name was, but I was like, "Look at this!" Like it was for him. I was surprised, but I guess
you're talking about a college child right now.
No, it's
like Cincinnati
or the Browns.
Cleveland?
I don't know which one. Gotcha. I could go and look though. It's like I'm joking. I won't. Anyway, well, thank you for my complimentary or compliment.
No problem.
Whichever one you want. Rose, I'll take more as you have them. I have a lot of roses for you, so I think we should get
going. Oh, that's a good week for me.
First of all, you went out and got me some theme music. Thank you. I know you didn't really do it on your own.
Oh, yeah. So hard work. Roses for Christina, Addie, and Sarah.
Thank you, guys. No judgment. I do think it could have been something from Renaissance, but I understand you guys don't have that type of budget. But
yeah,
I really feel like Beyonce is not paying anything. She's like, my music is mine. But so many of those songs, I just listen to over and over again and feel like they relate to me. Like Alien Superstar, Thick, I Gain Weight. Like, I really think that it could have been any song from Renaissance. Or you probably could have afforded, there's an old Chico de Burch song called Miss Wonderful.
That relates to you too. I mean, to be fair, you think that all songs, this is like a running theme, is you think all songs are about you. There's not a song that you listen to that you don't find a way to like figure out your role in the song. I think that's like a thing, right?
I just sing them passionately. So something about me, guys, is I have the worst singing voice in the world. Like, it is god awful. And I understand, like, I know that. Like, I got it from my grandma. She was a bad singer and I sound just like her. It's awful. Rest, I love her so much. Rest, she's dead, but oh my God, she was my sweetheart. But we both are the worst singers in the world, or she was, and I am. I've taken over the title. But I love to sing. So I just blast music in the house all the time. And sing. And I think I used to use it as like a repellent. Like I could be in the kitchen by myself if I was singing because no one wanted to be in there with me. But now it's like the only way I like to cook. And I cook a lot and I just cook and I sing and it's wonderful. And so I just sing all the songs passionately. Like the other day, I was both Deborah Cox and RL and We Can't Be Friends. No, that doesn't relate to me. Like I understand, like I don't see your car at Mama's when I drive past it. But I sing the line like it's me because I just really am a passionate singer. I'm good at
so working. How is this a rose about me? I'm confused. What did I do? Yeah, I think
you got me
absolutely.
Some theme music. You got me some theme music. And I
that wasn't a rose
that.
For me either. That was
well, I didn't know. I didn't know. So take it back. Rose for everyone else. Okay, you compliment me on GetUp. I got texts from people saying last week on Friday, you said nice things about me. So I appreciate you for that. Another rose I have, I even wore a sweater that has flowers on it because I'm throwing out so many roses
today. Let's appreciate that both of your first two roses were really just about you. Okay, rose number
I three. Told you I wanted roses and I was going to take them if I wasn't going to get it. But anyway, you did all of the kids' soccer games this week. So on Friday, I was like, kids, we're in DC. And so fortunately, we weren't, heavily impacted by Hurricane Ian. And I'm thinking of all of the places and the people that were, but it was just rainy here, like with the remnants of it. And so I told the kids who, my daughter, she is happy to miss her games. Normally both my daughters.
The younger one is.
No, she wasn't this week because she heard they were bringing donuts, remember? So that's why I had to go out to District Donut and buy her some donuts. She had a little cough, so I didn't want her to go out in the cold rain. But the older one, she always wants to sleep in. Like, she's good at it, but she also doesn't want to play. So I had told them, I think we're just going to have her. And she loves the rain. She loves being inside on a rainy day. It's like her, she's peaceful and happy and cozy. And so I was like, I think all the games are going to get canceled, guys. And her game was early on Saturday morning. And it wasn't canceled. And she was real pissy that morning. Like, you had to deal with her, remember? Like, she was not happy and slow moving. But anyway, you took them. You sat outside in the cold rain to her game and to my son's football game on Sunday and flag football. And you even sent me text updates and even got me some video footage. So that's a definite rose. I got to be warm.
Yes. I don't mind the rain. I don't mind the elements, and I enjoy watching them play. And it was fun. I even talked to some parents, remember some names. It was incredible. Took some pictures of Avery. My mom was there with her fancy camera. So I got some good pictures of Avery scoring goals. It was a fun experience in the mud. I hope we don't have to do it again next week. But it was a good one-off thing.
Well, next week she has a night game, so I hope we don't either, because it'll be cold and rainy. Yes.
Under the lights. They really need to up their competition. I feel like they haven't lost in 3 years, and they win by like 3 goals every week. They need to go play.
One week it was 8 or 9 to 1. That was really bad.
They need to stop. Like, they are clearly like travel team level soccer. They've beaten up on this rec team, but whatever. It doesn't matter. The other kids are getting a lot of character. I remember last year at the tournament they had last year, they played an older team and they lost in penalties, and they were like, what is this experience?
I know.
It was good for them.
It was it was a while ago, but yeah. But like, at least our daughter doesn't like it enough to do travel. Yeah. She would not be. She has practice 1 hour a week, and some days she didn't go last week. Because she had a doctor's appointment, but she was enjoying not going. Like, even that 1 hour a week. And again,
I was at the game, the flag football game, I was talking to some of the dads there, and they were like, their kids play lots of sports, and the ones that they're serious about, it's like, yeah, we got 3 days a week. We got 2 hour practices that start at 6 o'clock for 9 year old boys. And like, I'm not judging, like, whatever, mm-hmm. The kids love it. It's good form, structure, whatever, but like, specializing in, David Epstein wrote a book about how the myth of specialization and how it's not actually good for creating the best athletes, but it's the way that the system works. But I mean, I don't know. My first year of football, I was 10 years old, and we did practice 3 times a week for 2 hours a night. So I guess I can't talk about it.
So it's the age, almost, our son's 9, so almost the age.
But it was just for fall, and the kids now, the basketball, one of the kids on the opposing team is supposedly an incredible basketball player, and he plays basketball year round, practices 3 times a week for 2 hours, and then has games every weekend, and it's pretty much year round. But whatever, this is a whole nother conversation.
I read one time that about how rich with basketball, it's becoming almost tennis and golf. Yeah. Richer kids are mm-hmm. getting better at it. Is that why? Because there's so much training around it now. And is that the same with football?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been like that for quarterbacks with football, because to get the specialty coaches early on. And then there's also some cultural bias inherent in quarterback position. But I think that's part of it. And it's also just a bunch of former kids of athletes. Like the boy who was on the other team, his father played college basketball. And I think that probably has something to do with it. You look at the NBA, it's a bunch of those players who played elsewhere also. You got any more roses or thorns for me before we wrap this up?
Okay. A thorn. Oh my God, you're so great. Oh, you haven't posted on Instagram in a really long time. And quite honestly, we were out in these streets this week and I was looking cute. We really didn't get good pictures, but
I look cute too.
I know. Okay, we were looking cute, but I care more. So, and I just feel like you could post pictures of that, you know? The first time he posted a picture of me on Instagram, guys, I think it was during the pandemic, like the first day where school shut down, and he was like, it was so sweet. He was trying to be like, oh, I'm doing good with the kids. First of all, I have to. I'm stuck home with them. But it was sweet. But I looked awful. It was the ugliest thing. And I was like, you know what? That's beautiful that he thinks that this is a beautiful moment with me and Mike. Because it was something so complimentary that he said. But I'm just like, just post nice pictures of me. Why would you post ugly pictures of me?
You was running homeschool for three kids. And I was like, just in the basement trying to get my work done. And I was impressed and proud. And I know that you appreciate Instagram. So like, I knew that me saying that I was proud and impressed to you was not nearly as valuable as me telling everybody else that I'm impressed and proud of you. So I did that. I didn't care like if you were looking your best or not, because my goal is not to use you as a thirst trap on the internet.
So I know, like, but if it's, you think I appreciate Instagram, which I mean, I could have comments about, but I won't. But anyway, then at least choose a night. Like, you think I want to be out looking ugly? Like, and I'm like, okay. Instagram, but I have a private page and only like my friends. Because he doesn't post anything, he really doesn't have any followers, don't worry. So it was okay. But none, guys, none. It's like, I'm joking, not none. But still, I don't want his 10 followers to think I'm ugly. But anyway, another thing though, this is a thorn too. If he thinks I appreciate Instagram, I'm looking directly at the camera, then why has he never once wished me happy birthday or happy anniversary or anything like that on Instagram if he thinks I appreciate? Like, really, guys? It's like, for a while, I was like, is he trying to be any single one here with his 10 followers? Because no one's checking because you have 10 followers. Yeah. But anyway, that's something
else. Yeah, I'm pretty... pretty sad DMs, I have to admit. But yeah, I don't know. You can create some posts if you want me to post them. I just don't have the energy or desire. I don't care enough to be on there, but I'll work on it. I'll get better.
Does Instagram do like email and Twitter where you can like schedule posts? Because if so, I'm going to start scheduling birthday and anniversary posts to myself.
Probably. I mean, I can give you a birthday and anniversary post if you.
I mean, I don't want you to feel pressure. Like, I'm not.
Yes, you do. Clearly, you do. I mean, we've been married for 12 years. I've never given you a birthday anniversary post. The fact that you haven't accepted it means,
I've accepted it. I was just pointing it out to the people.
Okay. Well, I'm all about improvement. And
if he's gonna post an ugly picture of me, guys, then do I want it?
I'll clear the pictures with you. I mean, who you trying to look cute for anyway? I mean, I know who, ain't nobody out there.
He sees me at my bear that football player.
The punter or kicker for either the Bengals or the Browns.
It's one of four people. I'll figure out who. And so, okay, I really, obviously no more value to add to this, but you know, I'm here. I love you.
I want this awkward moment to last a little longer. You want to sign us off or something?
I could sing, with Miss Wonderful. Could that be our sign off?
Go for it. We'll fade out. Just start singing and then we'll fade out.
Is it like a copyright thing for me to sing it?
Just go ahead. We'll figure it out. I don't think it's going to be good enough. For them to be upset.
I can't let go. It's out of control. Oh my God.
Really do your best. Actually try to sound good.
Well, I need you to start me off.
Okay. I don't know. I'll look up the lyrics.
Oh my God, guys. I love to sing. Like, literally, I'm the most annoying. He talks about how I like Instagram a lot. Really, it's like I like to record concerts of myself for myself to go back and watch in my stories. Like, it's not for anybody. One cousin of mine says she enjoys it, and one friend from childhood. But otherwise, it's only the three of us. I'm the third who enjoy it. And it's mostly for me. I just really loved. I'm so passionate about it. I honestly think if I were good at it, I would not love to sing though, because like that would just be like showing off, you know? Like, I'm gonna try to be humble, even though I don't want ugly pictures of me on Instagram.
I can't find Miss Wonderful lyrics. Sorry, you're just gonna have to hit it all yourself.
Okay, well, we could do our own Deborah Cox. I went past mama's, saw your car there. To her, you're still family. Come on, you gotta start singing. I guess I'm still in Deborah right now, but this wasn't supposed to be a solo to do it. Seem fair for everyone to just go on. I tried and I can't do it because I'm still taught. This is all Deborah. I chose it. We have to do that in part where they're going back and forth. Are you gonna, if I get there, are you gonna join me or are you just gonna leave me? Guys, just take it all out. he's played me. He left
no,
me.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to get to the part. If you come near my face, what I'm trying to say. That's all I got.
I haven't picked this up
Can't
yet.
Can't be friends.
You'll never, ever find another. I keep saying it. Like,
can't be
I love you
friends.
Too much, baby. You have to say I love you. You have to say I love you.
That's enough. That's
You're
enough.
Not good hopefully, at it, Dominique. You're not good at it. Take it all out. Take it all out. Bye,
Leave
guys.
It all in. All right, bye.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.